welcome to the Dynamic Duo. This is your host, Kevin Barrett. And today we have a very special Lincoln's birthday show. Yes, it is the birthday of President Abraham Lincoln, the guy who held the country together and freed the slaves, according to our myth, that is to say, our commonly believed historical story that we all accept as true, pretty much. And indeed, President Lincoln is a great American hero, and I have a guest today who is working on becoming a great American hero himself. I'm talking about Colonel Bob Bowman, or Dr. Bob as we call him. He's got a PhD from Caltech in rocket science, so he is a rocket scientist, even though you don't need to be one to know that the official 9/11 story is a crock. He flew over 100 combat missions. He headed the Star Wars missile defense program under Presidents Ford and Carter. He was a congressional candidate in the most recent elections, and he was the only 9/11 truth candidate to come very close to winning. In fact, he pulled nearly 45% on Diebold machines, meaning that he actually may have won, for all we know. He's a sensible, articulate man with outrageously amazing resume. I think this is the most electable 9/11 truth candidate we've got, and I think he's somebody we need to listen to as a sensible, careful, thoughtful voice in the 9/11 truth movement. Welcome, Bob Bowman. How are you doing?
Well, thank you, Kevin. I'm doing fine.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you. And we've already got people starting to call in to talk to you.
All right.
I think that's a new record. I don't think I ever got a call in before the show started before. So, you know, Bob, I got an email from you today describing an incident in Melbourne, Florida, where yes. Amy Goodman was speaking to about 1,000 people. And she got bullhorned by somebody who, say it, Amy, say that 9/11 was an inside job. And you point out that you don't think this was a very effective tactic to use. Can you tell us why it wasn't?
Well, it certainly didn't win over Amy Goodman, and it didn't win over the 1,000 people in the audience. Great many people in the audience, even 9/11 truth folks, we're trying to shut him up because all he was doing was making us 9/11 truthers look like the kooks that we're accused of being. And he was turning everybody off. He started just by shouting in the middle of her speech, shouting over her and interrupting the whole thing. And then when people tried to get him to sit down and shut up, and Amy said, "Women, no, leave him alone. It's all right. It's all right. I'll answer his questions." You know, but people were just angry at him, and then he got the bullhorn out and started doing it over the bullhorn, and eventually he left. He walked out, and somebody had taken the bullhorn away from him and whatnot. Anyway, it was a nasty scene, and then Amy went on with her talk. But, you know, she's a potential ally, and so are people like Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich, and I think the last thing we want to do is to embarrass these people in public and embarrass ourselves by acting rude and boorish and irresponsible.
You know, I think you have a point there, Bob. I can sort of, you know, understand why people do things like this. Personally, I'm probably more frustrated with Amy Goodman than just about anybody else in the 9/11 truth movement, because the reason that I, instead of taking a nice, cushy academic job right after I got my PhD by way of taking a postdoc that I was offered at the University of California, I turned that down because it was funded with Ford Foundation money. And the reason I was mad at Ford was because I saw Amy basically ambush David Griffin by bringing on the Ford Foundation-funded debunker Chip Burle, who takes $500,000 a year from Ford. Amy took over $100,000 from Ford to tell their side of the story of 9/11 right after that happened. And so I got, you know, very upset with Amy. I have tried to communicate with Democracy Now! And get them to cover 9/11 critically.
which they haven't done. So I understand why people are frustrated with Amy Goodman. But, and you know, as you say, I think we have to control our frustration and direct it in more productive ways. So she is not as bad as Chomsky. She is a potential ally. I think she's, given the right circumstances, she could actually do some good things for us.
Yeah. Well, what I'm trying to do with folks like Amy is say, okay, you know, forget trying to get her to say 9/11 was an inside job, because I don't think she believes it, okay? But at the same time, we have enough hard information that we know that the government story is not the full truth. And it may be totally false, but we know it's not the whole story. We know we don't have the truth. We don't know why. We still don't know why there were no interceptors up there. Nobody has been able to properly explain how World Trade Center 7 came down. They're just, you know, chairman of the 9/11 commission admit that they were lied to and that the lies wound up in their final report. The American people haven't been told the truth. There has been a cover-up, obviously. They have confiscated audio tapes and videotapes and black boxes and all sorts of other stuff. This is evidence in the biggest crime in our history, probably. And so we have a right to say to people like Amy Goodman, well, look, don't prejudge the results of an investigation, but at least would you support a new, truly independent investigation into 9/11? Because we all know, and even the 9/11 commissioners themselves admit, that the final report, the official final report that came out, was not their work. It was the work of the White House. And it doesn't even tell the story that they wanted to have told.
And so, well, we heard from them that they were considering having the NORAD people prosecuted for perjury.
That's right. That's right. And I've talked to Governor Kaine and Congressman Hamilton personally, and they admit that they were lied to, and that the final report they had no control over. And Governor Kaine is particularly incensed that the final report left out what he considered were the most important conclusions that they drew. So what I say to people like Amy Goodman is, you know, because she's on the right side of just about every issue, will you support a call for a new, truly independent investigation so we can get to the truth? And beyond that, you know, if they say, well, no, look, it's, you know, we know enough and it's in the past and we've got more important things to deal with, then we say, well, let's support an investigation of the cover-up, at least.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach, although I think we have to find ways of insisting on the urgency of this, given that it's the most important historical event of the century.
Absolutely.
That it's justified mass murder on a scale of hundreds of thousands of people. This is Kevin Barrett on Dynamic Duo, talking to Colonel Bob Bowman, Dr. Bob, as we call him, in the 9/11 Truth Movement. We'll be right back in a moment. Hey, this is your host, Kevin Barrett, here on the Dynamic Duo. I'm speaking with Dr. Bob Bowman, one of our leading 9/11 truth activists, thinkers, political candidates. And we were just talking about the issue of some 9/11 truth people getting a little hot under the collar, in particular one person who was bullhorning Amy Goodman. Dr. Bob says that's not a good tactic. And I tend to agree. I, as much as I support Alex Jones, John Connors, these people who are bullhorning the right people, I you know, bullhorn Zelikow, yeah, I can see that. But bullhorning Amy Goodman, I know they want to do it. I'm quoting here from Barry Zwicker's Towers of Deception. Deep Dish TV was given $75,000 in 2002 by Ford Foundation to, quote, enable the television news series Democracy Now! To continue incorporating the aftermath of the September 11th attacks into future broadcasts. And they've been getting Ford money ever since. Obviously, they don't want to lose it, so even thinking about telling the other side of the 9/11 story might be too threatening to their pocketbooks. But I agree with you, Bob, that it's just not smart to make a make an ass of yourself like that in front of people who don't understand what you're doing, people you want to win over to our side. And I think that we do need to all try to control ourselves as we get
and
angry.
It wasn't all just, you know, turning off Amy Goodman, but it turned off the 1,000 people in the auditorium who were there to hear Amy Goodman, who had paid money to hear Amy Goodman, who were fans of Amy Goodman, and to have her trashed and treated that way, you know, doesn't make them sympathetic to the 9/11 truth movement.
Absolutely right. In fact, you know, politically, it's much, much smarter to disrupt Bush events, Cheney events, Zelikow events.
Yes.
You know, when you there's a disruption at one of their events, the overall, you know, the coverage that comes out of that ends up making them look shaky, goofy. It looks like people are angry at them. Going after Amy Goodman, as much as we may resent her failure to take on 9/11, is just not good politics. Well, we do have a caller on the line. It's Larry from Massachusetts. I hope Larry's still there. Are you still with us, Larry?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How you been, Kevin?
I'm hanging in there.
Good. Hi, Dr. Bowman.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing?
Great.
But by sheer coincidence, Dr. Bowman and I spoke only just this morning.
Yeah, this is Larry Petriarca, or am I not supposed to use last names?
Oh, that's okay. If you want to use it, I don't know those people's last names without their permission, but Larry,
yeah,
you're welcome.
I'm not afraid.
Hey, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I put my real name and phone number out there on the Internet, too, and haven't had to really regret it yet.
It's out there. They know who I am. So there's no hiding it now.
Well, hey, you did a great job organizing the 9/11 Tea Party for Truth up in Boston last December. That was terrific.
It was a great event, and you know, we can't thank you guys enough. You guys were keynote speakers there, so both you and Dr. Bowman, it was great to have you.
So, what's on your mind today, Larry?
Nothing. I, you know, same thing about this guy with the bullhorn. You know, it kind of shows the difference between those that are just, you know, they're content with screaming revolution and they think the masses are just going to follow them if they do. You know, I want to ask somebody like that that thinks that's a good tactic. I want to ask them how many friends have they hung on to through their, you know, indulgence in the movement. I mean, do they have any friends left, or have they alienated everybody? Because it just seems like a tactic that is just going to alienate everybody. And
well,
I
got to tell you, in fairness to this young man, later that night, a couple hours later, he called me at home to apologize. And he said after it was over, he realized that it was the wrong thing to do, and that it was counterproductive, and that hadn't worked out like he intended, and all of that stuff. So he was very apologetic. But, you know, I use this as an example, not to harp on him, but to plead with folks in the movement to think about their actions and try to adopt actions which can actually win hearts and minds to our movement.
That's right. And I'm glad to hear that he's learning from his mistakes, because that's so important. Most of us are kind of do-it-yourself, you know, first-time activists. I know in my case, there's never been a cause before that could make me want to spend all of my time working on it, and so I'm not a professional activist, and I've been making mistakes as I go along, as have so many other 9/11 people. You know, so figuring that out that quickly and realizing, you know, maybe I shouldn't bullhorn Amy, maybe I should wait till Zelikow or somebody like that is in town.
Yeah, and you know, the folks are planning to go to to New Hampshire and question Kucinich. I hope they do it respectfully, because if we want to take somebody on and really challenge them, let's do it to the bushy globalist big money Congress people, and there are certainly plenty of them, and not take on a guy who has been fighting the establishment and the big money interests all his political career, and has indicated his willingness to listen to the 9/11 story.
That's right. You know, that's the one thing that I think 9/11 people need to get straight is that, you know, why should we waste our time and energy going after either each other or people who are pretty close to joining us when, you know, we have a real enemy out there. You know, we have, you know, a bunch of traitors who, you know, people who covered up the crime of the century, and it sure looks like the reason they covered it up is probably because they did it. You know, we've got some real bad guys out there, so why waste our time bashing each other and bashing people like Kucinich?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
My take on it with approaching political candidates is, there's always the consensus that they're just going to sidestep the question, or they're going to appease the audience and just, I'll have my people look into it. So are you going to, even with tact, can you turn a politician towards openly looking at the information? But irregardless of whether you can, you've got to factor in what you can do with the hundreds of people in the room. Turning them into opening their eyes a little bit more without shocking them, or without pissing them off with a bullhorn, these are the people that between now and the elections will come back and ask those questions of their own, of other
right,
candidates and such.
Exactly, and to have a positive influence with the people in the audience, you don't want to seem to just be bullying the speaker and calling them names and stuff like that. You want to present some little nuggets of evidence with your question, and I think I suggested some in the email for example. Why weren't there any interceptors there? We know NORAD didn't tell the truth.
What happened to Building 7?
Yeah, what happened to Building 7?
I think that's the best question. Listen, we're going to have to take a break here, but we'll be right back. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Colonel Bob Bowman and Larry Patriarca. He gave us his last name. All right, Larry. We'll be right back. Hang in there. This is your host, the paperback writer, Kevin Barrett, talking with rocket scientist, fighter pilot, Star Wars chief, and congressional candidate, Dr. Bob Bowman. And, Dr. Bob, actually, my forthcoming paperback, Truth Jihad, my epic struggle against the 9/11 big lie, it actually just got a pretty good review from Publishers Weekly. It's the first time, I think, that anything that institutional has done anything good for 9/11 truth books. So that's kind of cool. You know,
great.
Trying to get this thing into the mainstream institutions, as you say, is a real tricky political battle. You know, I was just speaking with Jim Fetzer today. He was out having lunch over here in my house, and we had a little conversation about your fantastic candidacy and how, you know, we were saying, what would have happened, you know, if Dr. Bob had decided to try to use this massive, anti-9/11 truth onslaught that they used against you and turn that around in a jujitsu fashion by, for instance, you know, my idea, which of course I gave to you way too late, I'm sorry about that, was to try to get everybody in your district to see 9/11 Press for Truth and then try and get the Jersey Girls, you know, to come to your district and do some appearances with you. It seems to me that the fact that so many of the 9/11 families don't buy the official story, and we have a really good DVD showing that in 9/11 Press for Truth,
yeah,
could have been used to take all that energy that they threw against you and turn it around against them, because it seems to me that the people who were buying into this idea that you're crazy and hanging around with wackos like that crazy truth jihadi Kevin Barrett, you know, that they're trying to use that against you. But when those Jersey Girls get up there and say, look, we've got a real problem with this, and the emotional impact of that would actually be a huge positive for your campaign. Is that something you might be able to do in a future campaign?
Well, it's possible. The problem is that it's hard to catch the attention of the people with anything like that. The newspapers, you know, go out to hundreds of thousands of people that read the newspapers, and, you know, they just say, well, you know, Bowman doesn't have any credibility because of his association with the 9/11 truth movement, and it's hard to overcome that.
Well, I suggested that if there's a way to, you know, it costs you about 50 cents a DVD to mail a DVD to people in your district, and I would imagine you probably have, like, what, a million people or a little under that. So obviously you don't, maybe you didn't have $1 million this time, but,
Kevin, if I had, I think I'd have won.
There you go. Yeah, you would have been able to win with or without the DVDs.
Yeah.
But, it seems to me that if there was a way to get all the voters, you know, a copy of something like a 9/11 Press for Truth, that would, the media would have to cover that. You know, Bob Bowman sending out conspiracy DVDs. Well, what is this conspiracy DVD? Then there's going to be a story about that. Then you bring in the Jersey Girls down to your district, and they stand beside you on the podium with the cameras on you, and they say, you know, our loved ones died, and we don't know why yet, and we need to know why. And I think that that could actually, you know, play in your favor.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting sufficient publicity and all that. Well, I'm tackling that now by this nationwide speaking tour I'm doing, and if we can gather thousands and thousands of people to join the Patriots and people that I can then, you know, draw on from around the country. You know, this is a start. We've got to change the image of 9/11 truth with the public. And it's hard to do it in one local area, congressional district, without changing that image in the whole country.
That's a good point. So where can people go on the internet to get hooked up with your Patriot speaking campaign?
Well, the website isn't quite up yet, but it will be. And as a matter of fact, there's a brief bit on it already. The website is thepatriots.us.
Thepatriots.us.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, I'll be looking forward to seeing that and to seeing you on your speaking tour. I think that's a brave thing you're doing, getting into a motorhome and going around the country and talking about the need for change on these pressing issues, and starting with the need for a real 9/11 investigation.
Yeah. And on that website, eventually, we'll have the video of the C-SPAN thing from Los Angeles. Probably have video of my presentation in, you know, in Chicago or other places as well. And
well, great. You know, your Chicago speech, that was terrific. I actually I paid for your ticket there, by the way, Bob. Yeah, we had a ton of people, and it turned out at the very end there was room for one more keynoter, but nobody really wanted to deal with it because we already had like 50 people coming in to do either speak or give workshops or whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, we've got to get Bob in here. And they said, well, we already spent our money. How about you and your Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance? And I said, yeah, that's worth it. So I thought that was a, you know, a few hundred bucks well spent.
Well,
you get
thank
a great
you.
Speech. I guess that counts as kind of a campaign contribution in a way. I've got to be careful with that because we are trying to be a nonprofit organization. But, hey, we'll give money to anybody that's trying to get to the truth of 9/11, Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. We don't care where you're coming from. We don't care if you're religious or whatever. The issue here is to get a dialogue going around how we just can't live with this blatantly false, inadequate official story. of the most important historical event of the 21st century. There's something really strange about people's priorities when they just kind of, you know, shrug and say, well, okay, so this official story they gave us, the most important event of the century that's cost us all these lives, maybe it's not exactly right, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You can live with that, and then what couldn't you live with?
Yeah, and you have to also understand that it's not just the fact that somebody killed about 3,000 people on September 11th, 2001, but that event has been used by our government to kill over 3,100 of our young troops in Iraq, hundreds more in Afghanistan, and over 500,000 innocent civilians in Iraq. So if that isn't a major crime, you know, I don't know what is.
That's right. And they might only be just getting started, because the blueprint that they seem to be following was that one drawn up by Netanyahu and his friends in the late 90s, saying that the way to redraw the map of the Middle East was to go through regime change in Iraq, then move on to Iran and Syria.
Yep.
And if they try to do that, the only way they can really redraw the borders of the Middle East is to essentially destroy, you know, destabilize and destroy the entire region. This would be a war crime of just, you know, the first magnitude. And it's all, you know, it all goes back to the psychological effect of 9/11, that new Pearl Harbor that changed everything.
Right, right. And we have to recognize that PNAC document that you're talking about, written by Wolfowitz, Pearl, Libby, and Rumsfeld, and all those guys, those same folks wrote the blueprint for Netanyahu's foreign policy.
That's right. It's the same people.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be right back in a moment. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, a dynamic duo, speaking with Bob Bowman. Stay with us. And I'm speaking with Dr. Bob Bowman, who has a resume that pretty much dwarfs that of anybody else in the 9/11 truth. In fact, just about anybody in the country. I don't know if I can find anybody with a better resume than yours, Dr. Bob. I'm very happy to have you on board with 9/11 truth and other movements to try to make our world better.
Well, thank you.
You know, I wanted to ask you, so I don't know how much detail you want to get into here, but you know, I was just speaking to somebody who is a journalist who's writing unpleasant articles about the Arizona conference. And this guy he goes to the Screw Loose Change website to look for, you know, cherry-picked answers or debunkings to the various points that those of us raising questions about 9/11 raise. And when I mentioned to him that interception is a reasonably standard procedure in which commercial airliners that go off course or show signs of hijacking can expect to have the FAA people notify NORAD, and NORAD to at least, you know, go through the beginnings of a procedure to scramble fighter jets to intercept these off-course airliners. This is not something that's unheard of. Well, he says that Screw Loose Change claims that the only interception that has ever occurred in the last, I don't know how many years, was Payne Stewart's aircraft, whereas there's at least one report that gets cited in 9/11 truth circles that there were something like 60-some interception procedures at least initiated in 2001 prior to 9/11. And so my question would be that, you know, when we in the 9/11 truth movement say that, look, these planes, there were multiple planes with multiple signs of hijacking starting at around 8:15, we had a tower hit at 8:46 and another one at 9:04. Then at 9:37, we had the Pentagon hit. And it wasn't until 10:06, which is almost 2 hours after multiple planes showed multiple signs of hijacking, that Flight 93 was shot down or whatever, went down or whatever happened to that. So we had almost 2 hours of these allegedly hijacked planes waltzing around our skies, rogue planes flying all over the eastern side of the country, for 2 hours, and there was absolutely no effective air defense response, and we got three radically different stories purporting to explain that. So I guess my question would be, somebody who's flown fighter planes, just how improbable is the government story, and just how common or uncommon a procedure is this interception procedure?
Well, first of all, you have to ask how improbable is which government story, because as you say, they've got three of them, and none of them are probable, and I'd say that I can't see how any of their stories could be possible. How common is it for intercepts to happen? It did happen 60 times in the 9 months prior to 9/11.
Okay, and what source can we quote for that other than the news report that we commonly quote?
I haven't gotten into that.
Okay, but as a fighter pilot, you're saying that that's quite plausible.
Yeah, I used to be an interceptor pilot, and I've been through the drill, and I know what it takes. And Payne Stewart's was only the most widely known because it was a celebrity, and it was widely publicized, but that kind of intercept happens all the time.
That's what I understood, but apparently these so-called debunkers are out there trying to claim that that was the only time it ever happened. Outrageous.
Yeah, it is outrageous. And there was a new directive issued on the 1st of June 2000, one, which just 3 months before 9/11, which changed somewhat the authorization procedures for intercept. I've read that directive, and what it seems to say is that any request for intercept by the military must be approved by the Secretary of Defense personally. However, when you look at the old procedure, the wording isn't much different. And there may be a nuance there, because what always happened was that immediately upon losing radio contact or a plane going off course or losing the transponder, they'd call the plane. If they can't make contact, they immediately called NORAD for a scramble. And then, after the fact, they would notify the Secretary of Defense. Whether or not the intent of the new regulation was to reverse that procedure so that you couldn't scramble jets without first getting the okay of the Secretary of Defense is sort of debatable. But in any event, we know that Rumsfeld was in the Pentagon, but nobody knew exactly where he was at the time of this whole thing started. Anyway, NORAD's initial story to the 9/11 Commission was patently false, and the 9/11 commissioners recognized that. The second story, wasn't much better. We know that there was a cover-up. We cannot, at this point, prove with certainty whether our government was trying to cover up guilt or incompetence. If they were covering up incompetence, of course, it raises the question, well, why was nobody fired or demoted or court-martialed or punished in any way? The people really in a position to do something about it were all promoted and given the Medal of Freedom. But if they were covering up guilt, then the question arises, well, whose guilt? Were there Americans involved? Were they Israelis? Were they Pakistanis? Were they Saudis? Who were these other parties who were part of the conspiracy? We know it had to go beyond the 19 hijackers and Osama bin Laden, if they were involved at all. But we knew it could. We know it couldn't end there. There had to be other people involved, because of all of those 10 to 15 exercises that were going on that morning that masked the activities of the hijackers. Was there somebody on the inside that tipped off the hijackers as to when all those exercises were going to happen? If so, that makes it an inside job. Doesn't mean that our whole government was involved, but it means somebody was. Or were the exercises particularly planned in order to mask the hijackers? That makes it an inside job of another magnitude.
That's right. It seems to me, I won't hold you to this, but in my opinion, after having looked at this, it would look to be that inside job of another magnitude, especially given the background of the alleged hijackers.
The point is, we don't have to decide. All we have to do is get a truly independent investigation that can get to the bottom of it and find out, and then there can be indictments and trials. We don't have to try it and come to a judgment now.
That's a good point. I'm with you on that. This is Kevin Barrett on Dynamic 2. I'll be right back.
This day we must surely be learning.
If we bullhorn Andy Goodman today, we'll figure out that wasn't such a smart move, and we'll go and bullhorn Philip Zelikow tomorrow. Welcome back to Dynamic Duo. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, and I'm speaking with Dr. Bob Bowman, the 9/11 Truth candidate who very nearly won in his Florida district this past election, despite being smeared by the entire corporate media as a crazy 9/11 conspiracy theorist, despite being wildly underfunded, and despite being up against the Diebold voting machines. So that was quite an accomplishment, and I'm really proud to have Bob here on the show with me today. So, Dr. Bob, you know, your state is a pretty interesting place to be doing the stuff you're doing. Let me quote from this terrific book, Daniel Hopsicker's Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. And he says, the connection between Florida and most of the hijackers in the deadly attacks had state leaders questioning whether the Sunshine State had become a haven for international terrorists, where the world's most nefarious characters feel free to congregate in a modern-day Casablanca. And then there's a quote, you reside in a druggy, mobbed-up state that also houses a lot of foreign unfriendlies with ties to various international bad guys, is run by a Bush, and where people become alligator bait and get lost in the swamps frequently. Additionally, there seems to be a major overload of paramilitary types floating in. Quite a place to be doing 9/11 truth work. Run by a Bush isn't all. It turns out that Governor Jeb Bush apparently declared martial law in Florida a couple of days before 9/11. That's right, before 9/11. And immediately after 9/11, here's a quote from the local police chief in Venice, Florida. The FBI took all our files, everything. They loaded the files, that is, on the so-called hijackers, police reports on them and so on. They loaded the files right outside this window into two Ryder trucks and then drove them right onto a C-130 military cargo plane at the Sarasota Airport, which took off for Washington with Jeb Bush aboard. That's right. The governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, moved in to these flight schools that had allegedly trained the alleged hijackers and seized the records, not just the records from the flight schools, but also the police, all the police files on these alleged hijackers, and disappeared them. And Jeb Bush did this because just a few days before 9/11, he had declared martial law in Florida and deputized the National Guard. I mean, this is pretty outrageous. I mean, how does it feel to be living in a state where this sort of thing goes on?
Well, that's very outrageous. Fortunately, we were out from underneath one of the Bushes. He's just been replaced with a Republican, but at least replaced. It is interesting indeed, and there's growing evidence that those so-called flight schools were not flight schools at all, but covers run by the CIA.
That's right. Apparently the biggest drug bust in Central Florida history happened at one of these so-called flight schools. And, you know, the DEA must not have gotten word that it was a CIA-protected drug operation, so they grabbed a Learjet full of heroin. This Learjet belonged to a character named Wally Hilliard from my own state of Wisconsin, a so-called retired insurance executive from Green Bay. He's rumored to have ties with the shady side of the CIA. He's the guy who financed these two flight schools in Venice, Florida, and it was his Learjet full of heroin that was seized by the DEA, and then they apparently apologized and gave it back. This was during the training of these alleged hijackers.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, way back, remember the Iran-Contra thing?
Oh, I do. I was actually an adult at that point.
Yeah, I talked to one of the pilots that would run guns down to the Contras and then bring it back loaded with drugs. And so it to pay for more guns and so forth. And what he told me was that damn Congress, if they hadn't passed that law that you couldn't spend money on, that we wouldn't have to do this kind of thing. It's a shame that Congress has forced us to bring drugs into this country.
Well, yeah. I guess the whole illegal drug industry could make that kind of argument. That boy, it's, it sure is terrible that Congress has forced us to make billions of dollars doing this. Yeah, talk about lame excuses.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's pretty big money, though. Some people have estimated the world's illegal drug trade is adding up to as much as a trillion or even 1.5 trillion per year. Some that has to get laundered somewhere, but it's too big to launder at mom-and-pop money laundries, so it has to go through the biggest banks and corporations. And according to this interpretation, Mike Rupert, of course, is one of the guys who developed it, the folks who are in charge of laundering that $1.5 trillion a year are basically our Wall Street mafia, the same people who run the shady side of the CIA. And these guys move the drug profits into the banks and corporations that they have invested in earlier so that those banks and corporations that year will show increased earnings and their stock prices will go up. And they play a shell game where, each year they move their drug profits to a new laundry. They invest in that laundry stock, and they make a killing on the stock market as well as on the money laundering. So yeah, it's. I think there's a pretty big Aegean stable to clean up here. But getting back to that Florida situation, it's interesting that the 9/11 Commissioner Benveniste was the lawyer for Barry Seal, the world's most famous CIA drug running pilot. He's probably not the one you talked to.
Yeah.
But Barry was I guess being prosecuted, and Benveniste was defending him. And at some point, Benveniste, Seal allegedly was going to turn state's evidence on Benveniste, who had supposedly some kind of shady connections himself with this whole thing. And then Seal was gunned down at a stoplight in Baton Rouge. Benveniste then became, unfortunately, just one of the better 9/11 commissioners. he was one of the better ones.
Yeah.
And then there are those who argue that pretty much everybody on that commission was either, you know, well-connected in Washington to the point that they were, you know, basically cover-up people or mobbed up directly.
Yeah.
So getting back to the question about or questions about things that you would know as a pilot, Bob. This is a little bit off topic, but maybe not that much, because we are talking about powerful international crime syndicates that pull off these kind of nasty operations. I recently came across reports that in two air crashes that were only separated by a month or two, the plane debris pulled out of the ocean showed that the fuel valves in these planes, the fuel tank valves had been turned to the off position, which is apparently very unusual to say the least, because there's a safety catch, right? You can turn your fuel supply to the left fuel tank or the right fuel tank. There's also an off position, but to get into the off position, you have to push down a sort of a safety catch. But in both JFK Jr.'s plane and also the plane that that Egyptian pilot supposedly, you know, dive-bombed into the ocean screaming Allahu Akbar, both of these crashes happened within the same couple of months. And in both cases, those planes supposedly had the fuel supply valves turned to the off position, which has puzzled a lot of researchers. Is somebody who knows planes, is there a way that this would happen naturally? They could get knocked into the off position?
No, I don't believe so at all.
Okay, well, I'll mention a little more about what that might imply when we come back. This is Kevin Barrett speaking on The Dynamic Duo with Colonel Bob Bowman. Stick with us. It is a little harder when you open your eyes to the corruption going on around us. On the other hand, that gives us something to work on. It gives us a challenge to try to make the world better by fixing some of this corruption. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, on Dynamic Duo. I'm speaking with Dr. Bob Bowman, a guy with a resume that you wouldn't believe. He's a Caltech rocket scientist with 100-plus combat missions under his belt, head of the Star Wars Missile Defense Program under Presidents Ford and Carter, a congressional candidate who nearly became the first 9/11 truth candidate to win in the most recent congressional elections. And Dr. Bob just told me that the chances of a fuel supply valve being turned to the off position through impact or somehow accidental cause in these air crashes that I'm talking about, the JFK Jr. crash and the Egypt Air crash that happened just a month or two after that, I believe, are very low. I won't get deeply into this quote-unquote conspiracy theory right now, but I did just see a great DVD called Who Killed JFK Jr. that points out that the best hypothesis for how this could happen would be that some kind of Manchurian candidate programmed to push these planes into a nosedive into the ocean and cut off the fuel supply so it couldn't be pulled out by the other pilots or by JFK Jr. himself, assuming that his quote-unquote flight instructor, the Manchurian candidate, had done this. This would be one explanation for why they would be in the off position and that there aren't really any others. Anyway, for whatever that's worth, it's interesting that the Arab and Islamic worlds, which I study, are full of people who think that the Egypt air flight was taken down not by some crazy radical Muslim fundamentalist who just took down all these Egyptian army officers for no particular reason, but rather by some sort of intelligence agency that wanted to get rid of those 30-plus high-ranking military officers from Egypt. And we see things differently, I think, here in the U.S. than folks in the Islamic world do. When I was in Morocco for a year, people listened when we said, you know, you guys need a truth commission to deal with your torture history because they just come out of a period of severe human rights abuses. And we said, you guys need a truth commission. And they turned around and said, well, you know, you Americans need a truth commission too, regarding JFK and RFK and all of these other scandals that you guys don't seem to be interested in clearing up. So, anyway, Bob, it's interesting to look at how the different, you know, different countries and different cultures see things. But I think that in the Islamic world right now, people see that the biggest problem is corruption. They're not that worried about, democracy would be nice. They would like democracy. But the thing that they really resent is corrupt rule. And I think here in the U.S., maybe we haven't quite figured out just how corrupt things are here.
Well, I think that's correct. What we have is a government full of people who are lining their own pockets and lining the pockets of the billionaires, and in turn getting paid off by the lobbyists for those billionaires. We wouldn't have K Street lobbying firms spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year if they weren't quite sure that it was going to pay off with billions of dollars in profits for them that they wouldn't otherwise get. So that, by definition, is corruption. And what we have, therefore, is a government which does not serve the people of the country. We have a marriage between government and big industry, big corporations, and that is precisely what Mussolini defined as fascism.
That's an excellent point. Do you think that we're actually living under fascism yet, or are we still in a borderline state?
Well, we have a fascist government which has not yet thrown off all the shackles of republic. And our job, I think, we patriots, is to preserve what's left of our republic and get rid of the elements of fascism. On my Patriot tour that's coming up this year, a four-month tour all over the country, the overall theme is for the people of this country to demand a government which does three things: follows the Constitution, honors the truth, and serves the people. Now, that's very simple. It doesn't say anything about Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal, whatever. Patriot wants a government that follows the Constitution, honors the truth, and serves the people. And if we had a government like that, what a difference that would mean. There would be no more undeclared wars of aggression. There would be no more Gulf of Tonkin incidents and other false flag things, of which 9/11 may very well be one of the largest. We would not have energy policy written by Ken Lay and Dick Cheney in the halls of darkness and secrecy. We would have policies made which serves the interest of the people. We wouldn't have prescription drug plans written by the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical manufacturers. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Everything that's wrong with this government has nothing to do with right or left, big government, little government. It has to do with whom government serves.
That's a great point. What you're calling for reminds me a little bit of the progressive populist movement that arose towards the latter part of the 19th century and did manage to clean up a lot of things in the early 20th century. Here in Wisconsin, we have a state that has had a reputation as being relatively squeaky clean.
Yeah,
certainly compared to Florida, which
yeah,
isn't saying
yeah,
much.
weren't you the state of Bob La Follette?
Exactly. Bob La Follette was kind of the high point of that progressive populist movement.
Yeah.
And the way that worked was people got so stirred up that they demanded relatively honest government. Now, it seems to me that where we're at right now, either we need to somehow stir people up enough to demand honest government again, like has happened with the progressive populist movement, or we may have our fascism go the route of earlier fascisms, that is the hubris leading to a massive catastrophic military defeat. I recently was watching a terrific film, Lion of the Desert, about Omar Mukhtar, the man who led the Libyan resistance to fascism, somebody you may never have heard of. But to me, the Libyan Holocaust, when the Italian fascists killed more than half the people in Libya and put them in concentration camps and killed them through those two decades, heroic resistance, to me, that's a great story that most Americans need to hear. But in any case, I hope we'll figure out a way to deal with these fascists through a progressive movement, a populist movement, and we'll talk more about that when we get back. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Dr. Bob Bowman, a 9/11 truth candidate who nearly won in his congressional district in Florida in this most recent election. We were talking about fascism and how this country is drifting into that never-never land, that liminal borderline between out-and-out full-fledged fascism, where they've thrown out all of the legalities, and an actual constitutional republic, which is what we used to sort of have. And we're discussing how we can put an end to this. There are really two ways fascist states meet their demise. Either they launch wars of aggression that come back to bite them, as happened to Hitler and Mussolini, or the people hopefully can rise up and put a stop to it before it really fully starts. And Dr. Bob Bowman has started a Patriots group that's calling for three simple points. Follow the Constitution, honor the truth, and serve the people. I'm with you on that, Dr. Bob. How can we get people excited enough about this to do what those progressive populists did in the last century and actually clean up our government?
Well, that's the purpose of my nationwide tour. I hope to get thousands and thousands of people excited about this. Let me just read a brief thing on this tour from the website, thepatriots.us. The website is up. There's a lot more to be put on it, but it is up there. And I say this about, you know, having a government that follows the Constitution, honors the truth, and serves the people. Think what a difference that would make. No more undeclared wars of aggression. No more spying on the American people. No more jailing of dissidents. No more hordes of illegal aliens driving down wages. No more exporting of jobs. No more NAFTA. No more North American Union. No more government lies, false flag attacks, and cover-ups. No more corporate welfare. No more health plans written by insurance companies and pharmaceutical manufacturers. No more energy policies written by Exxon and Enron. No more trillions in debt. Mostly importantly, no more using our sons and daughters to kill Arabs for the oil companies. Let's take back America.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good program to me. I bet most of my listeners would vote for that. Now, so we're going to have to stir people up, and you will be traveling around the country doing that. When does your trip start?
April 10th.
April 10th, and it continues until when?
August 10th.
April to August. That's quite a road trip.
Yes, it is.
And people who want you to make a whistle stop in their communities will be able to contact you through the patriots.us website?
Yes.
Sounds good. Well, that sounds like a website to bookmark. I'll be looking forward to seeing you when you come through here. It's getting people to come on out and starting these progressive populist movements. A lot of times you need something that people are angry about. And I don't know, do you think that people can get angry enough about what we have now? This, you know, the economy is kind of middling. This war is heading towards catastrophic defeat. The leadership is thinking of upping the ante by widening it to Iran and Syria.
Which was, of course, part of their original plan.
It certainly was. If they, you know, I guess in the short term, we're actually in sort of an emergency situation to try and prevent that from happening. The time frame that we're seeing in some of these reports is around the time that you're leaving on your trip is kind of the height, you know, the heightened danger zone for the possible unprovoked nuclear attack on Iran that Cheney's been calling for. Do you have any ideas about what we can do to stop this or to react to it if it happens?
Well, first of all, of course, by exposing the truth about 9/11 and about the cover-up and how it is connected to the Iraq War, we're putting these guys on notice that so far they may have gotten away with this one, but everybody is watching and alert, and they're not going to get away with it again. The other thing that I'm doing is getting word any way I can to the generals in the Pentagon that if someday they are ordered to nuke Iran, that they remember the Nuremberg principles that this country wrote at the end of World War II when we tried, convicted, and executed a bunch of Nazis who said, well, we were just following orders. And we wrote the Nuremberg Principles, which are enshrined in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which says that we in the military not only have the right, but the duty to disobey an illegal order. And I'm telling those generals, not only should you disobey that order, but you should arrest whoever gave it as a war criminal.
And you're able to actually get this message to some high-level military people?
Doing what I can through various routes. I used to know people in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They have retired. But, I think my words are getting there.
Great. Yeah, I'm trying to get there, too. But, you know, it's kind of hard to know that, you know, you're urging these guys to to you know, disobey any orders like to launch nuclear attacks on countries that have never harmed us.
By the way, since you're in Wisconsin, my tour plan calls for me to be in La Crosse on the 3rd of July, Madison on the 4th of July, and Milwaukee on the 5th of July.
Hey, well, that sounds like you're pretty well covering the state there. Although you're missing Eau Claire, which is a great place. I had an overflow crowd in the library up there recently talking about 9/11 truth. Okay, so the 4th of July in Wisconsin, that sounds like a patriotic opportunity if I ever heard one.
Right.
Madison on the 4th, all right. Well, boy, I think I should be ready to welcome you then, and it's going to be great to have you.
Okay, if you haven't gotten the outline of my tour and whatnot, just go to thepatriots.us and you can see it. You can see where I will be on each day.
I'll definitely do that, Bob, and I will be alerting people that I know around the country to pay attention to that, because that should be a great tour. Do you think that this could morph into a political campaign for the next round of elections? Are you thinking of running again either for Congress or for president?
Well, my current plan is to run for Congress again in 2008, but it be unconnected from this tour. This tour is being sponsored by a nonprofit organization, and the Patriots is nonprofit and tax exempt, and all money we raise is tax deductible. And I still need organizers in a lot of cities, including in Wisconsin. And I'll be calling people. I'm sort of doing this in chronological order. And since Wisconsin is sort of late in the tour, I haven't called folks there yet. But I will be looking for people who want me to come to their town and who are willing to join with other groups, peace movements, churches, whatever, and organizing an event.
Well, we may be able to help you there, at least in Madison, Milwaukee. I don't have any contacts yet in La Crosse, although I think I've heard of one person there who might help you. Well, that's a great idea, and I hope people will be taking up on that in other cities. Looks like we have another break coming up. Kevin Barrett on Dynamic Duo. I'm speaking with Dr. Bob Bowman. Hang in there. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back on Dynamic Duo. This is Kevin Barrett, your host, speaking with Colonel Bob Bowman, otherwise known as Dr. Bob, both a colonel and a doctor, actually a Caltech PhD, I believe. And Dr. Bob Bowman is probably the most electable, mainstreamable pro 9/11 truth person out there. So anybody who's listening to this who cares about our country, cares about getting to the truth about the most important historical event of the 21st century, and cares about trying to keep this country a constitutional republic rather than a fascist dictatorship, should be paying attention to Dr. Bob and should be interested in checking out his Whistle Stop tour schedule that's beginning on April 10th and will continue through August. He'll be visiting the whole country pretty much in his motorhome, and you can go to thepatriots.us to talk to Dr. Bob and find out how to help bring him to your community. So, Bob, I think you're really onto something here. We're speaking on a conservative Christian radio network. I'm the token moderate Muslim, that, you know, you're running as a Democrat or when you're running for things. But a lot of your platform should appeal to conservatives. That is, you know, honoring the Constitution. I mean, that's a conservative thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, in my article, The Patriots, which is on the website, thepatriots.us, in that article, which is on the homepage there, you'll see that about 90% of our proposals are solid conservative principles. And, yeah, we've got some progressive ideas, too, but they're based on the Constitution. We believe, for example, that health care for all is covered by the government's responsibility to take care of the general welfare.
That's right. That's the kind of thing that that the kind of people who vote for Hillary Clinton might like. But your platform also has a whole lot of things that that conservatives are going to like, such as you're talking about actually running the government on behalf of the American people, and you know, working class people who've seen their economic stability just slaughtered in the last couple of decades, due in part to things like NAFTA and this so-called free trade stuff, shipping our productive capacity abroad, letting in huge numbers of illegal immigrants to work at extremely low wages, drive the wages down. You're probably the best candidate they have on those issues.
I agree, and those issues, along with a constitutional foreign policy, ending these foreign interventions like Afghanistan and Iraq, which we've been warned about ever since George Washington, and which are not constitutional. My main three issues when I ran for Congress were the war, wages, and health care.
And I would think people would start to pay attention on health care when they realize that the system that we have now is really, it's just as cumbersome and corrupt, if not more so, as the worst possible national health care system. So talking about a simpler national health care system might be something that certain, you know, certain kinds of moderate conservatives could deal with, you know.
Right. Well, you know, right now we spend twice as much on health care per person as they do in places like England, Canada, and Germany, France. And health in those countries is better than it is here. Many diseases are four times as prevalent in the United States as they are in those countries. One of the problems with our health care system is that it doesn't preserve health, it just treats illness. And it one of the reasons it's so expensive is because half of every healthcare dollar goes to the overhead and profit of the insurance companies and the for-profit hospitals. This money never finds its way to the doctors and nurses who take care of us. And the most fiscally responsible way to have universal health care would be to kick the blood-sucking insurance companies out of the healthcare business altogether with a single-payer system. Now, people, you know, would say, oh, that's socialized medicine. You can't do that. No. The government will not hire the doctors. The government will not own the hospitals. It is not socialized medicine. The government's only responsibility is paying the bill. And the total amount of money that we taxpayers have to put out for health care will probably wind up being less. Now, Barack Obama and John Edwards and other folks have come up with universal health care plans, but they're talking about universal insurance. You know, those 44 million Americans without health care now, they don't need health insurance. They need health care. And there is no way, without increasing taxes, to provide coverage for everybody if we leave the insurance companies and their profits and their overhead and their advertising and their interference in medical decisions and all that in the system. But if we take them out, we can actually have universal health care, better health care, for less money than we're spending today. And I don't know why conservatives couldn't say, that's a good idea.
Well, you know, Bob, I tend to agree with you. I hate to admit it, but as a moderate libertarian, I think you're right. I've studied this a little bit. My brother is a doctor who knows about these issues, and I think you're onto something there. And I think that's, you know, why, a good example of why we need pragmatic thinking. You know, we need to think about what the actual problems are that we're facing and come up with pragmatic solutions to them and not let some kind of prefabricated ideology get in the way of pragmatic thinking. So I commend you for that. You seem to be one of the best people out there as far as finding real solutions to the biggest problems that are looming in front of us.
Yeah.
And I wish you well for your tour. I hope we can turn that into something really exciting, build up you know, better and bigger crowds as you go around.
Yeah, thanks. The Bible in one place says there are neither male nor female, Greek nor Jew, slave nor free, you know. Well, I'd like to adapt that. Today, there is neither Republican nor Democrat, liberal nor conservative. There is only we patriots.
That's right. I think
speaking truth to power and demanding accountability.
That's right. I think the Patriots movement has a chance to expand beyond its, you know, sort of small-time militia base, and rally the people of this country against this national emergency that we're facing right now with a bunch of traitors and neoconservative lunatics leading us down the primrose path to fascism and maybe Armageddon.
Yeah.
So a voice of common sense like you is certainly appreciated. This Iran thing really bothers me, Bob. When Iraq was attacked, I mean, I was really upset about that. But the thing was, you know, Saddam Hussein's government in Iraq had perpetrated some fairly serious war crimes, especially their invasion of Iran. Now, Iran, on the other hand, it's the only democracy in the Middle East, unless you want to say that Israel is, even though they ethnic cleanse the majority of their population. Not only do they strike them from the voter rolls, but they ethnic cleanse them and have them shut up in concentration camps, millions of people for years. Iran is a democracy. Iran should be our friend. Iran was the victim of our own war of aggression that Saddam Hussein waged on the behalf of Western powers. This is obscene, this idea of nuking Iran. So we need to stop that. We need to support people like Bob Bowman who are talking sense and talking truth. Well, it looks like we're facing the music. Thanks for being with me, Dr. Bob.
Thank you. Thepatriots.us.
Thepatriots.us. Check it out. Come out and see Dr. Bob when he's in your town on his tour. And come back and check out the Dynamic Duo when we come back tomorrow at the same time.
Don't know why you say goodbye.